Is there a place in time where logic breaks down and wonderment begins? Could that be somewhere or sometime along an indefinable line between the reasonable and the highly unlikely? Makeshift Stories presents a monthly journey into the improbable.
Today's story, episode 222, Tea with Sasquatch 149. Read by Mitchell 2. Opening and closing theme by Matthew Erdman. Somewhere and sometime, you might discover a trans-dimensional being. I'm not prone to flights of fantasy or exaggeration. I never believed in Santa Claus or the Tooth Fairy or elves or gremlins or Bigfoot. I never even liked fantasy or science fiction. My friends would say I'm so anchored in reality I lack imagination, so I am entirely predictable to the point of being boring. Maybe that's why I decided to surprise everyone and sign up for a wilderness expedition to a remote part of the mountains with a backcountry guide and animal tracker who claimed to guarantee meeting a Sasquatch. It was not a cheap tour, but it was unique among the results for adventure vacations on Google. A month ago, I laughed about it, being my one shot at doing something totally unexpected, but now it seems anything but funny. Almost dying in the wilderness of exposure and having your worldview turned upside down has a way of making things hard to joke about. Search and rescue told me I was lucky. Most people without proper gear would have not survived. They tried unsuccessfully to convince me what I am about to tell you is the delusions of a half-frozen mind. Maybe it is, or maybe it was my subconscious attempting to cover my stupidity. I don't know, but it was real to me. So I'm just going to tell the story and let you decide what, if anything, it means. The transfer from the airport to the hotel where I would meet Randy, the guide, didn't set off any red flags. It was the usual 12-seater van you see at airports all the time that pulled up at the designated post and picked up about 8 of us. After dropping the other passengers off at various upscale hotels, the driver turned and informed me that mine was still an hour and a half away. It was dusk by the time we pulled up in front of an old, single-story motel built in the middle of the last century, which shared a cleared area on the roadside with a lonely-looking truck stop. "This is the place," the driver announced apologetically, then jumped out to retrieve my bag from the rear compartment. He drove off without waiting for a tip, leaving me and my bag in a dusty gravel parking lot, staring at a small flashing open sign in the window of the motel office. "Okay," I reminded myself, "you were warned this wasn't a glamping experience." Although I had imagined meeting my fellow adventurers in a rustic mountain lodge with a big stone fireplace the night before we set out. I shrugged off my reservations, hoisted my pack, I was explicitly warned to only bring things I could carry in a rucksack, and checked in. Then found myself staring at an old-style tube TV, watching a national park video on an ancient VHS machine. There was no internet and only spotty one-bar cell service if you walked outside and pointed your phone in the right direction. So I reluctantly let go of my mountain lodge fantasy and went to bed, letting the lonely growl of transport trucks on the highway lull me to sleep. Someone was pounding on my door. I groaned, then bolted upright, confused, before I regained my bearings.
"Miss Hawthorne, it's Randy. It's 4:30 a.m. and we're ready to go."
A muffled, gruff male voice impatiently reminded my slowly awakening brain. I turned on the light.
"Just a minute, I'm not quite ready," I yelled.
Then quickly dressed to make it appear that I hadn't just got up. I set my bag down and opened the door, acting like I had been up for a while. Standing outside, hand poised to knock again, was a hefty man in his 40s, with flecks of gray in his long hair, wearing a torn leather jacket. Behind him, I could see a woman in her early 20s, dressed in neo-hippie bell-bottoms and boots.
Both glared at me like I was their worst nightmare, a pampered executive from an advertising agency, which I am. The man, finally getting over his initial shock, gave me a smile.
Hi, I'm Randy, and this is Sue, and you're late. We gotta get going. We're expected.
Sorry, I apologized. I know there's more people to pick up.
No, you're it. The other group canceled.
Randy casually informed me, then turned and walked away, Sue nipping at his heels. I trailed them to an ancient-looking beat-up 4x4 just visible in the pre-dawn light.
There's no one else?
I tried to confirm, starting to regret the hubris which led me here.
Yep, they canceled a couple weeks ago. It's just you, me, and Sue there. Sue's sort of a grad student doing field research.
Hi, Sue chirped too enthusiastically for the early hour. This is going to be great, isn't it? Fewer people, greater chance of an encounter. That's what Randy says. More time to experience them.
What are you studying?
I asked, skeptically, trying to sound friendly.
Nothing yet, Sue admitted cheerfully. I just got accepted into a master's of forestry program. I start next term, but this is great. I'm going to base my thesis on this encounter. The first fully documented meeting with a humanoid cryptid. Awesome, right? I'll be starting with most of the research already done.
I wanted to point out that it might be a bit premature to start planning her grad thesis before we even found a broken twig, but Sue was so excited I decided to keep my cynicism to myself.
I met Randy last week while I was picking up garbage along Route 7, she continued enthusiastically.
I gave her a questioning look.
Oh, I work for highways. It was a summer job, Sue explained. I was picking about 8 miles west of the junction when Randy came tromping out of the bush and waved at me. He asked me where he is, then tells me about his latest encounter with a whole family of Sasquatch. He tells me he's got a tour coming up and needs help with it. So I quit on the spot, and here I am, assistant guide and researcher,
she noted proudly, as if that explained everything. Seeing my skeptical expression, she added,
I've been wilderness camping all summer, so I've got lots of experience.
My confidence dropped a few notches. Both of them stood there, like enthusiastic puppies waiting for me to join them. When I didn't, Randy impatiently grabbed my backpack and literally threw it into the back of the 4x4, slammed it shut, and opened a side door for me. That's when I noticed the hastily made sign on the side of the truck, which was mostly obscured by fresh mud. Randy's Sasquatch Adventure Tours.
How many tours have you done?
I asked, suspiciously.
This is my first, Randy admitted proudly. I've had the ad on the website for a few years. I knew it would eventually get some attention. Almost had 2 groups in one go. I'm already planning a second, maybe in the Andes. Come on, we need to get going. I got commitments.
Commitments? I asked dubiously, wondering if I should abandon my pack and make a run for it. But I reminded myself I was here to try something new, and I was determined to follow through.
Yeah, we gotta keep to the schedule. We're already a bit late starting. Here.
Randy pulled a crumpled piece of paper out of his pocket and forced it into my hand. I unfolded the soiled-looking sheet and discovered an itinerary of sorts. The first line read, half hour before dawn, client pickup and orientation.
We're going to skip the orientation, Randy advised, so we can get back on schedule.
We bounced along an old forestry road, which climbed quickly out of the valley. My heart skipped a beat as the highway and truck stop, the last slivers of human presence in the landscape, disappeared behind a row of spruce trees. The road took us through a mountain pass, and as we descended into the next valley, I began to realize that we were truly on our own. Doing their best to ignore me, Randy and Sue bantered back and forth about bears and cougars and things I couldn't make out over the roar of the old engine. Outside, beyond the mud-spattered windows, it was the beginning of a beautiful midsummer day. The views of the mountains were spectacular, their snow-covered peaks glistening yellow gold in the sunrise temporarily distracted me from my misgivings about the tour and its guides. I decided to sit back and take in the amazing scenery. So I pulled out my phone and took photos to show my friends. After a few shots, its battery died, and I cursed myself for not checking its charge. I had been counting on using it to document the black bears Randy would claim to be Sasquatch. I just hoped he knew what he was doing around bears. By the time the sun had risen above the mountain peaks, the road had degenerated into two rather sketchy-looking tracks. The grass and small shrubs, fighting to erase the scars left by the passage of trucks at some point in the past, bore witness to the road's lack of use. Randy had to slow the 4x4 to a crawl as he eased the ancient rust bucket over rocks and roots. Finally, we stopped in a small alpine meadow with a stream cascading through the center. The tracks ended at a large boulder which had rolled down the slope at some point, blocking the way forward.
"This is as close as we can drive," Randy announced, turning the ignition off and jumping out onto the rocky ground.
The sun was almost at its zenith as I stretched the stiffness out of my body. While Sue and Randy were busy pulling gear out of the back of the 4x4 and jamming randomly selected bits into their packs, I took time to look around. We were in a stunning hanging valley high in the Rockies, just below the tree line. Despite the warmth of the sun, the air was cold and almost biting at times. It was scented with hints of spruce and pine, and I took in deep breaths filling my lungs. I couldn't remember when, if ever, I had been so far from a city. This was really why I had come, I suddenly realized. I didn't actually care about finding a Sasquatch. The pristine landscape was all I needed. Yes, it was a weird way to get here, but I knew very few tourists had ever seen this spot.
"Let's go,"
Randy finally directed, pointing to my pack, which was lying on the ground where one of them had dropped it. I struggled to get it on, regretting I hadn't been more discerning about the things I had packed. Randy sniffed the air like a dog, then arbitrarily pointed in another direction and started off. At first, we followed an old animal trail until it too ended. Then, we just picked our way around trees and boulders, rising out of the valley we had parked in, then dropping into another before climbing again. The sun was starting to sink below the adjacent peaks when Randy finally stopped. Exhausted, I dropped my pack and plopped down on the ground.
"This is the place," he declared, pointing to a shallow depression just below the tree line where a few conifers appeared to have been blown over, forming a crude shelter of sorts.
"They'll meet you here at the end of the day," Randy predicted confidently. "Never fails. So we'll hide and wait for them. They're a bit shy, you see. They won't approach if they think someone is here."
I was a bit underdressed for the altitude and getting cold. The ground looked damp, and the thought of lying on it to wait made me feel even colder. Randy seemed to know what I was thinking, took off his pack, and pulled out three camouflage thermal blankets and handed them around.
"This'll help keep you warm," he declared. "We're going to be here until first light tomorrow."
"Really?"
I groaned.
"And how are we going to observe at night?"
This was what I had expected. There'd be some bears or mountain goats or something large crashing around the dark that we couldn't really see. Randy would take a grainy, unfocused video on an ancient handycam of the things, call their shadows Sasquatch, and declare the trip a success. I cursed myself for not charging my phone. It had a great low-light camera. Randy smiled and rummaged in his pack again before pulling out three Army surplus night vision goggles.
"We'll use these," he declared, positioning us around the perimeter of the hollow at equal distances and making us cocoons out of the thermal camouflage blankets.
Next, he threw branches over Sue and I, leaving only a small hole to look through. Finally, Randy did the same for himself. Despite the thermal insulation, the cold ground began to leach through into my bones, and I found myself shivering as the first evening stars began to meekly peek out between the gathering wintry clouds. The wind picked up, and I curled in on myself, keeping my face in the night vision goggles just inside the opening so I could see out. I wasn't about to miss the show. Through the goggles, I could make out the fading thermal ghosts of the day. Trees, cooling rocks, and two small blotches where Sue and Randy were hiding glowed in sickly shades of green. Dark clouds finally sucked into the mountains and stuck like candy floss to a paper cone, and it started snowing. Snow? In July? Really? While I cursed my decision to come on this crazy tour, the IR glow of the only other human within miles slowly faded into a gray-green haze as the snow reduced everything to the same ambient background temperature. Barely 3 hours into the night, I found myself shivering and needing to pee. I was finally fed up. At that moment, the badly maintained motel seemed like such an oasis in this freezing craziness that I was determined to march across the hollow and force Randy to take me back. Then, I heard branches crack somewhere behind me. I spun onto my back, kicking up a spray of new snow from my recently covered camel blanket, and found myself staring into the fur-covered face of an 8-foot-tall cryptid. Yeti, Bigfoot, Sasquatch, whatever you want to call it. The creature looked down on me with what I interpreted as pity and motioned in an almost human way for me to get up. Instinctively, I tried to look for signs of Sue and Randy, but the goggles only showed the faint green ghosts of trees and rocks. The thing behind me muttered something, and another smaller cryptid appeared from nowhere and scooped me out of my shallow hiding spot with incredibly strong arms. They carried me to the makeshift shelter made of fallen spruce trees Randy had pointed out in the center of the hollow. I was too frightened to fight. Had my guide and his assistant been captured too? I wondered. However, even with the night goggles, I couldn't find them in the shadows of the crude shelter. The smaller one carefully placed me on the ground and guarded me as the larger one tipped a boulder over and pulled out a bow drill and a pile of dry moss, which had been buried there as well. It drew the bow back and forth until it had a pile of glowing ashes, which it carefully moved to a depression in the moss. It blew on the mixture until small flames burst out. Satisfied, it dropped the smoldering moss into a depression and piled dry wood from a corner of the crude shelter on it. Soon, it had a significant campfire burning. The smaller one retrieved a crude bowl made from fired clay from under another rock, disappeared outside, and returned with it full of snow. It placed it on the fire, waited for the snow to melt, then dropped in a mixture of dried leaves and pine needles. Two clay cups appeared from the hollow of an old tree stump. Carefully, the thing dipped the cups in the boiling, dark green liquid and pushed one toward me, taking the other and miming putting it to its lips. I looked anxiously toward the opening of the rudimentary structure. It seemed to know I was looking for my companions. The thing nodded to its smaller partner, who left, I assumed, to find them. I somehow knew they would be okay, and picked up the clay cup, which reminded me of my first project in an art class when I was 6 and tentatively sniffed. Sharp pine, softened by something earthy and sweet with a hint of berries, greeted my sense of smell. I let some of the warm liquid trickle down my throat and could feel it chase away the cold, then pool in my core, making my shivering stop. I took another sip, and the warmth began to flow out toward my limbs. I started to relax, but felt suddenly lightheaded, like I was going to faint. I put the cup down so I wouldn't spill it, and gathered my head in my hands and waited for the feeling to pass. Through the corner of one eye, I watched as the Sasquatch scratched something into the dirt. It was almost impossible to make out in the flickering firelight, but I was sure it had drawn 3 numerals, 1, 4, and 9. Feeling a bit better, I looked up at it. The creature pointed to the scrawled symbols, then to itself. "That's you?" I tried to confirm. It may have nodded, I'm not sure. My brain felt sluggish, as if my head was full of freezing mud. It gestured again for me to drink. Without thinking, I found myself gulping down the steaming green fluid. The spruce boughs which lined the interior of the shelter began to spin around me like I was drunk.
It's good for you.
The large cryptid encouraged me, in English.
It will take the chill away, and the dizziness will pass quickly.
The voice was deep, calm and quiet, almost like a whisper. Yet its lips weren't moving. How are you talking? I wondered. It seemed to know what I was thinking, and answered.
The herbs in the tea. They are opening the pathways in your mind to the greater reality of the universe.
Its thoughts drifted through my brain, making my fear and anxiety melt away, replacing both with a soft internal glow and new understanding. The number you made in the dirt. It's your name, isn't it? I tried to transmit.
I am the 149th to lead the mission in this area.
Its words simply manifested in my consciousness, almost as if they were my own thoughts. It eased down on its haunches until our eyes met. 149's eyes were so dark, I thought I could see the tiny twinkles of distant stars in the infinite wells of its pupils, and suddenly felt my consciousness falling into that void. Afraid of losing myself, I turned away.
I can sense you are not ready, and that is fine,
149 comforted.
Few are ready to experience the beyond on their first encounter. You are wondering what is hidden in the infinite darkness.
It gave a human-like shrug, which made its massive furry body seem almost cartoonish.
Each of your experiences are different. You will find what you are meant to find, so I cannot answer your question.
Your mission? I asked, still recovering from the fact we are having this conversation without talking. 149 tells me to finish the tea so the new pathways growing in my mind will become strong enough for us to have a more complex discussion. I suspect the piney liquid has hallucinogenic properties, but find myself compelled to drain the cup. We wait in silence while the world around me stops whirling and comes back into such great focus I can see the individual crystals of the snow which had drifted into the entrance of the shelter.
Our mission, 149 corrected, is to exist as observers around the edges of your consciousness. We can offer advice if asked, although none of your kind has for a very long time. However, we now find ourselves fading from your collective imagination as your world is transformed by you in directions it was not meant to go.
I don't quite understand, I admitted.
And that is your collective problem. You are blind to subtleties, such as how a pebble disturbed on the slope of a mountain by your foot changes the path an ant must take in 1,000 years on the shore of a distant lake, which forces it into a spider's web. From the boundary of your world, we witness these effects and find ourselves saddened by the cascade of overturned pebbles escalating into an avalanche of unintended results.
149's body appeared to soften for a moment, then come back into focus.
It is getting harder to project our presence into your reality as it moves further off course. There will be a day, not that far away, when we can no longer reach you. Then you will be truly on your own.
You can see into the future? I asked. No. We can see where the chain of events you are creating in your present will carry you. It's not the same as knowing the future. The path can be altered at any point, and we are willing to advise on where to best intervene. But you must ask, listen, and act.
I'm here. I'm asking, I declared. I had many questions and was saddened to learn it would take more than a few random people rediscovering their existence in the backcountry to effect change. To restore the world to its correct path would require us to reconnect en masse. Instead, the connections were getting fewer and weaker.
We will still try, one person at a time, to change your course. But the avalanche of pebbles caused by your feet is growing too fast. You have met us. It is up to you now,
149 encouraged. I suspect we talked about much more, but at some point, my mind became too thick and slow, and the clarity of our conversation receded back into the snowy night and the fog of half-remembered memories. I woke up the next morning in my hollow, on the edge of the clearing, shivering so hard my teeth were chattering. I poked my head out and looked around in the sharp, cold light of the morning. Snow had blanketed everything, erasing the ground and any evidence humans or Sasquatch had been there. I threw on all the extra clothes in my backpack, wrapped myself in the thermal blanket, then did jumping jacks in a futile effort to warm up. On the edge of panic, I went to search for my guides. Where they had been hiding, I found only snow. Even the crude pile of broken trees Randy claimed was a Sasquatch shelter showed no signs of use. Inside, there was no evidence of a campfire. I turned over rocks, desperate to find something from last night's meeting, but only managed to scatter insects who had taken shelter from the sudden snowstorm. Realizing I was hypothermic, the rational part of my mind insisted I needed to get lower down the mountain before nightfall. Without any winter gear, I would die if I stayed, so I finally gave up and tried my best to thread my way back down the way we had come, getting lost several times. Finally, as the sun dipped between the peaks, I spotted the old 4x4 surrounded by three red search and rescue vehicles.
Hello,
I yelled, expending my last reserves of energy to run toward the trucks, waving my arms.
There she is,
a woman wearing a down parka covered with a yellow vest shouted. Two more people appeared from behind one of the trucks, and the three started to race toward me. Minutes later, they had me wrapped in warm blankets in the back of a truck.
We've been looking for you for a couple of days,
the woman in the yellow vest explained.
With the unexpected snow, well, most people don't dress properly for the mountains. It's easy to die of exposure up here.
A couple of days? We just got here yesterday, I exclaimed. All three stared at me.
Your friend phoned us after you missed your return flight 3 days ago. The guy at the truck stop said a man and a woman dropped off that beat-up truck for you and left.
She pointed at the old 4x4.
That was about a week ago.
Where's Randy and Sue?
Didn't you find them?
I demanded.
There were other people with you?
The woman, suddenly concerned, reached for her radio.
The guy at the motel said that you were on your own. The other two went back to town in a car.
Randy and Sue never turned up. Search and Rescue didn't have a missing persons report, so they wouldn't pursue it. The 4x4 was rented and signed out in my name. They claimed I had been hypothermic and probably hallucinated my guides. After paying a fine for venturing into the backcountry without registering at the park office, I was released. I decided not to mention my tea with 149.
Thank you. Makeshift Stories is a proud member of the Alberta Podcast Network, locally grown, community supported. To get other great APN podcasts, head over to albertapodcastnetwork.com and listen in on Bridging the Gap. Steph and Karen talk to people from 7 to 97 and find out how we are the same and how we are different. This episode of Makeshift Stories is also brought to you by Yegg Pod Fest, presented by Edmonton Community Foundation, in partnership with the Alberta Podcast Network and LitFest, Canada's nonfiction festival. Running October 1st through 3rd, Yegg Pod Fest will be held all online this year, so anyone can tune in to experience it. Events include master classes with professional podcasters, panel discussions, featured interviews, and more. Some of APN's member shows will be there too, so join us for the virtual party from October 1st through 3rd. To check out the full lineup and get tickets, head over to yegpodfest.ca. That's yegpodfest.ca. This episode of Makeshift Stories is also brought to you by Pod Power. With Pod Power, our sponsors are making it possible for us to amplify the voices of Albertans and Alberta podcasters. In this episode, Edmonton Community Foundation is helping us give a Pod Power shout-out to High Level Hip Hop. CJSR presents High Level Hip Hop. It's a deep dive into Edmonton's hip-hop scene and the artists helping shape it. The show takes a unique approach to introducing listeners to the OGs and youngbloods of Edmonton's hip-hop scene. The show is aimed at those who love local music, but might not have had the chance to fall in love with the city's surprisingly diverse hip-hop scene. Each episode features an interview with a local artist, plus a fresh track they record at CJSR. Check out episodes with Arlo Maverick, Please Be Nice, and more throughout the season. High Level Hip Hop is produced by CJSR, Edmonton's campus and community radio station. Download it wherever you find podcasts and at highlevelhiphop.transistor.fm. Makeshift Stories is released twice a month, around the 1st and the 15th. This month's story was written by Alan V. Hare and read by Mitchell Too. Post-production by Matthew Erdman. Opening and closing themes were composed and recorded by Matthew Erdman. If you'd like to connect with us, please send an email to makeshiftstories@gmail.com or visit our website at makeshiftstories.com. Links to both are in the show notes. You can help us out by getting your friends to subscribe or follow wherever they listen to audio. Makeshift Stories is released under a Creative Commons Non-Commercial Attribution No Derivative License, which means you are free to share our stories. Just remember to credit us, and don't alter anything.